The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
But that was a lot about America the other day. Now a bit more about Britain. Although this still applies to other people, Americans might remember the USS Liberty, shelled and bombed almost to destruction by the Israeli Defense Forces. But, you know, that's they're your greatest ally, Americans, so don't criticize them. Anyway, this is not the USS Liberty. This is the HMS Sheffield. And it hasn't just been hit by a missile from the Israeli genocide force. It's been hit by an Argentinian missile. But it hasn't really. It's been hit, in fact, by a French Exocet missile. So, got to blame the French for the fact that, because it wasn't the only ship hit by Exocets, which caused the most damage of anything in the Falklands War to British soldiers and airmen and sailors. So, got to blame the French, haven't we? No, you haven't. See, it was French Exocet missiles that did that, but those missiles were not sold to the Argentinians by the French. Who do you think sold the Exocet missiles, which killed British servicemen by the score and maimed, terribly maimed, hundreds of others, who sold those missiles to the Argentinians? Yes, my friends, you probably guessed it. Brave little Israel, our greatest ally. Why? And they sold them when the war was clearly looming. They sold, they knew exactly what they were doing. Why? Because the Israeli government at the time particularly hated the Brits. Menachem Begin was a former terrorist who in his youth had helped to murder British soldiers as well as Arab civilians. And he hated the British, and he specifically approved that controversial arms sale because it could get British servicemen killed. That's it. So much for our great ally. Please do remember that and use that if you're talking with any older Brit who's befuddled by the propaganda and all the rest of it, doesn't really get it. There's not much point talking to some of them about murdered Palestinian babies because, frankly, they don't really care. They've had a gutful of immigrants and brown people and wailing Muslims and so on. They don't understand that babies aren't like that, and that some of those babies are Christian in any case, etc., etc., etc. They're not really interested, but they are interested in dead British servicemen. So remind them of precisely who was responsible for that.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your co-host. Today is Sunday, so it's time for the Limeys for a show entitled That Vaccine Story You Never Heard About with my co-host, Maleficus Scott. So let's bring him up right now. Maleficus, are you with us?
I am. I am back, Andy, for another episode of the Limeys. It was supposed to be, well, it's beautiful weather here yesterday. I don't know what it was like up there in the big smoke, but it was beautiful weather here yesterday. And sadly for my other half, who is currently walking the dog, it is currently raining. Supposed to brighten up around about show finish time for me, so that works well.
Well, the time is 10:31 a.m. here in the UK on Sunday, May the 5th, 2024. Just to timestamp it. And the weather where I am in London, it is sunny out there, quite bright. It's been, I was moaning to Malefkas in private messages through the week. He sent me something, and I sent him something and said it was freezing. And it really, we have one day where I was out in almost T-shirt weather, and then I have my big coat with a hood on again, you know, and a day later, the weather is literally all over the place. And yesterday it was a strange one because we were going to be out and they were predicting rain from like 1 o'clock and we could still be out at one, but it was just really warm. And so I ended up taking an umbrella out, which isn't very good where I live because there's lots of high buildings. And I had a decent, I'm talking a Samsonite umbrella, you know, something that cost, I think it was £20, even in TK Maxx. So it wasn't one of these cheapy things. And I got caught in wind where I lived, and it sheared through some of the metal, just ripped through it, snapped it. And so I very rarely use an umbrella. I wear my coat with a hood. But I do have a coat with a hood that is very thin, and it's for that purpose. But that went in the bin several months ago after the zip broke, and it wasn't worth replacing because it was a cheapie. And it's one of those things I haven't really been looking around for it, that's why I still haven't got one. But because it's been the winter, I've been wearing the other one, and it's just too warm at the moment to wear the other one with the hood. So kind of balancing things out. The weather is just, it'd be interesting if other people are experiencing it, having similar experiences around the world, because we know how much they like to tamper with the weather. And we mentioned Dubai the other week. And who was I looking up? I was reading some article about some businessman in Dubai, and he was a big British businessman. He said he'd moved to Dubai. He said because they let you do what you want in Dubai, they don't keep poking their nose into your affairs like they do in the UK. And I thought maybe there's, you know, some push that the powers that are really in control don't want that sort of freedom anywhere. And that could be another reason for that freak weather event happening to them. But as I say, we can only speculate, but we wouldn't have to speculate if we had an honest government and an honest media, which we don't. But that clip you just heard during the show intro segment was taken from Nick Griffin's show entitled Andrew Tate's Dirty Secret from Tuesday, April the 16th, that you can find on purge.tv. And it's the second clip from that show that we use. We used one a couple of weeks ago, and just goes to show for me that when Nick is at his best, very few people can top him. His anecdotes and things that I'd never heard of before are very powerful, very interesting, and very well presented and concise and to the point. But with regard to today's show title and show image, the show title is That Vaccine Story You Never Heard About. Well, Malefkas, you got hold of it, so what can you tell us about it?
Well, this was amazing. This was sent to me by one of the regular listeners of the show. I won't mention any names, but it simply came with the caption, My Mother's School Writing Exercise from 1962. And let me read it out to you. So there's a newspaper clipping there, and there's some writing next to the newspaper clipping, and above it, it says in handwriting, obviously his mother's handwriting, two vaccinated girls die. And her next little bit of writing next to the clipping says, I obtained this information from the Birmingham Post. Two small children died 2 weeks after having the vaccination for smallpox. There was an inquest, but Mr. R.S. Bishop said they were not certain of what caused their deaths. So I'll just zoom this in a sec so I can read the actual article for you. Because as I went to the opticians last week, I won't need to zoom this in, but I wouldn't need to zoom this in, but they're not ready yet, my glasses. So I'm just going to put this onto the desktop so I can zoom it in properly. Now, the actual newspaper clipping.
I can read it for you if you like, and then you can comment.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I've zoomed it in, but by all means, read away.
Okay. Right. So it's hidden behind my mixer here, so I'm just opening it up. Right, so do you want the newspaper clipping first?
Yes. Well, yeah, I've read the other bit. So it's
So what was the year from this book again?
1962. This was a writing exercise that this person's mother did in 1962. So
Excellent. So I wanted the year for the show post. Right, so the actual article, it's snipped out. Well, you can see it, folks. You've got the... it's in the show image. A Bradford Health Department spokesman said last night that medical tests were being carried out on the bodies of 2 7-year-old girls who died in St Luke's Hospital, Bradford, nearly 2 weeks after being vaccinated against smallpox. Inquests at Bradford yesterday on the two girls were adjourned to a date in adjourned to a date to be fixed. I think I'm going to have to maximise it too. Adjourning the first, the coroner, Mr. R.S. Bishop, said, "We are not quite certain yet what was the cause of death, but we are trying to find out in the interests of everybody. All army families at the Royal Engineers Stores Depot at Marlborough Farm, Kinnerton, were being vaccinated against smallpox yesterday. The depot is 2 miles from the RAF station at Gaydon near Warwick, where precautions were taken after the admission to hospital of the aircraftman D. Shenton of Stone, Staffordshire, who was taken ill with suspected smallpox while on leave from Gaydon. Several children from the Army Depot attend the primary school at Gaydon. Like the Gaydon personnel, soldiers at the depot had recently been vaccinated against smallpox. Children from surrounding villages who attend the Gaydon school were also being vaccinated." Back to you, Maleficus.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, what's interesting about that is that D. Shenton, the aircraft man D. Shenton, was taken ill with suspected smallpox. So they've obviously gone round vaccinating everyone on the base and any children associated with the base at the local school as well. So, but, you know, just very interesting. 1962, two girls presumed to have died from these smallpox vaccinations. So yeah, I just found that uncanny, particularly with what's occurring, you know, nowadays. As I always say, what's the similarity or the difference between the mainstream and independent media 6 months to 2 years, depending on the subject matter? So we've got we've got a few little things that coincide with that this week as well, haven't we?
Yeah, it's not going to be the last time that we're talking about vaccines, folks. I was saying to Maleficus before the show, we've got something that's come up at a very fortuitous time because we agreed on this title. Maleficus got the information for me last week, ran it by the person who sent it, who said we could use it. And that's why an article came up that we both found and we both had on our list to present today. And we're going to be having a discussion about vaccines later in the show. So for those of you interested in the more current affairs and that aspect of the show, please stay tuned. Okay, so Maleficus, what have you been up to?
I've had a bit of an expensive week, actually. So I've been doing a lot of stuff in the studio and one of the pots, potentiometers, one of the little twisty knobs on my amp has given out. Therefore, when I stick it on the second channel, the crunchy channel, the dirty channel, as they call it, or distorted, if you want to put it that way, I can play at nothing but full volume, which is not very pleasing for the neighbors. So what it stems from, in actual fact, is it doesn't stem from anything. It's the pot or the little twisty knob has just died by itself, probably from lack of use rather than overuse, if you like. It's probably just oxidized in one place, but the pot needs replacing. What's really lovely about it is there's a guy who lives in Cornwall who used to know Jim Marshall, the guy, you know, Marshall Amps, Marshall Amplifiers, a very, very famous name. Well, the guy who's fixing my amp used to know Jim Marshall while he was alive. So while I was down there, I contacted him to make sure that he was still in business. And he is. He's drawing a pension, but he's still working. And I said, "Could you possibly have a look at the amp?" And he said, "No problem." And I got down there and I said, "Look, I didn't know how busy you'd be, but I've got a couple of other things in the car that I wouldn't mind you having a look at." And he said, "Oh, it's not too bad at the moment." He said, "What is it?" So I said, "One of the things is a Dunlop Talk Box. Have you heard of one of those, Andy?"
No, but I mentioned, you know, Dunlop are a lot more than tyres when I've actually got a system deck, record deck that is made by Dunlop, and you have to buy the arm separately. Back to you.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. Well, this will add fuel to your fire because the Dunlop Talk Box was made famous by people like Peter Frampton. And it's a little thing that you plug into your amp and you put it between the amp and the speaker. And when you press the little button, it changes the sound from coming out of your speaker to coming out of a speaker that's in the talk box. And the sound then travels up a plastic tube, which is attached to your microphone. And you put the tube inside your mouth, and the shape of your mouth dictates the frequency of the guitar sound. And the guitar sound is then picked up by the microphone and put out through the PA system. So that's what a talk box is. So you can literally make your guitar talk. What a lot of fun. So I took that down to him as well, asked him if he could fix that because it wasn't working quite right. And the last thing I took down was I own a Fender Stratocaster, a 1987 Japanese Fender Strat. And the reason I like it so much being Japanese is that the neck is very thin and the fret wire is very, very thin, obviously designed for smaller hands than the US versions. And me having exceptionally long fingers, it's great. I love that guitar. It belonged to my friend, a guy called Simon, who sadly, at the age of about 22, 23, was killed just before Christmas in a car accident. He was run over by a car or two, depending on how far you want to go into the inquest. But anyway, regardless, I ended up with two of his guitars. He had 10 or 11 guitars when he died. And I was donated one of them by his father. And I bought the Fender from him because it was a valuable guitar. And I took all the electrics. I took all the faceplate and all the electrics off it after I owned it because I wanted to have a fun project. You know, buying my own pickups, my own electrical equipment to put inside the body of the guitar. So I've kept the original faceplate with all the electrics and I've boxed it up. It's all safe. So, you know, I've still got Simon's original guitar, if you like. But as you can imagine, a guitarist is not an electrician or someone that can deal with electronics as a rule. So although my project worked, I took my guitar down to Russ yesterday and said, I was going to ask you also to look at my guitar purely because it's my first and only ever soldering job. It's quite a complicated one. And last time I came down and I mentioned it, you said there'd be no shame if I brought my handiwork down. And he smiled. He said, bring it in, bring it in. So I'm really looking forward to having my guitar project back. I'm really looking forward to having it back done professionally. My idea, but all the soldering work done professionally. I did warn him. I said it's a mess in there. So that's my week, Andy. But it's probably going to be quite expensive because dealing with electrical equipment always is, isn't it? So yeah, that's been my week. What about you?
Well, what you said reminds me about all the boiler problems that I had, and then people that service boilers don't do electrics, so I had to get the electrician in to do the thermostats. So it's two separate hits. But on going back to Peter Frampton, there's actually, he's mentioned in a Half Man, Half Biscuit song called Third Track Main Camera 4 Minutes. And the lyric is, if ever an album title was in dire need of an exclamation mark, it surely had to be Frampton Comes Alive. Run for the hills, Frampton Comes Alive. One more time, Frampton Comes Alive. And with regard to customising guitars, have you heard of Eric Clapton's Blackie guitar?
I haven't. Go on, enlighten me, because I've never been a huge fan of Eric Clapton until he started speaking out against these jabs, actually, that we're talking about. So,
well, it's actually got this guitar. It's Blackie Brackett's guitar. It's got its own Wikipedia page, just this guitar. So I'll read what's on it. Background. Well, basically, Blackie is the nickname given by Eric Clapton to his favourite Fender Stratocaster. In 1970, Clapton switched from Gibson electric guitars to Fender Stratocasters, largely due to the influences of Jimi Hendrix and Blind Faith bandmate Steve Winwood. His first Stratocaster, nicknamed Brownie because of its sunburst brown finish, was used on his albums Eric Clapton and Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. The same year, Clapton founded the Show Bud Guitar Shop in Nashville, Tennessee. He bought six 1950s Fender Stratocasters for $200 to $300 each, roughly $1,500 to $2,300 each in $2,023. After giving one each to George Harrison, Pete Townsend and Steve Winwood, he took the best parts of the remaining three built, circa 1956 and 1957, and Nashville luthier Ted Newman Jones assembled Blackie, so named for its black finish. Clapton first played Blackie live 13th of January 1973 at the Rainbow Concert. Clapton would play Blackie for many years on and off stage, such as in his guest appearance in The Last Waltz. Finally, after the Behind the Sun tour in 1985, it was retired due to issues with the neck. In 1988, the Eric Clapton Stratocaster was released. According to Clapton's specifications, he began playing his new signature model shortly after. Blackie was seen again by the public for a 1990 television commercial for the Japanese automobile firm Honda, when, at the specific request of the company, Clapton used Blackie to record a new guitar solo on Bad Love in New York and was filmed for the commercial doing so. Blackie was also brought out on stage for one number during the Royal Albert Hall shows in 1991. In 2019, the guitar was on stage at the Play It Loud exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, also featuring other instruments from iconic musicians. He played it almost exclusively on stage in the studio from 1974 to 1985, recording hits such as Cocaine, I Shot the Sheriff, Wonderful Tonight, Farther Up the Road, Lay Down Sally, and various live versions of Layla, and it featured on several album covers and videos. In 2004, it was sold for $959,500 wow. US dollars at a Christie's auction to support the Crossroads Center, a drug and alcohol addiction rehabilitation center founded by Clapton. The auction's winner was the music equipment chain Guitar Center, and the bid set the world record for the world's most expensive guitar. In 2006, another Stratocaster signed by a large group of celebrities, including Clapton, was auctioned to benefit the victims of the 2004 Asian tsunami, selling for $2.8 million, surpassing Blackie's record. And the final bit here, may as well read it, says Custom Shop Reproduction. In November 2006, Fender announced a limited run of 275 Blackie reissues by the Fender Custom Shop, identical to the original. They were released on 24th of November 2006 and sold out within hours. The original Blackie was exhaustively examined and measured for the reproduction. The reproduction Blackies were constructed by a team of master builders, with each of the various 275 produced being assigned to one master builder. So what do you reckon that any of those would go for, Malificus? I imagine quite a bit.
I would imagine so. A limited run on anything nowadays, you know, particularly something that's, you know, a high spec, a limited run on anything nowadays, you know, just increases in value, particularly with the cost of living crisis as it stands. But yeah, I mean, it's rather like Brian May's guitar from, you know, Brian May from Queen. He and his father made that, and I think the dots, the fret markers, were buttons out of his mum's sewing tin. You know, he wound the pickups himself, all that kind of thing. And you can buy the signature, you know, you can buy copies of Brian May's guitar. It's got a very individual, particular sound.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And just going back, one thing that I forgot to mention is today's traditional Christian message, entitled New Ten Commandments Versus Ten Commandments, an 8-minute show written by Dr. Peter Hammond that I put up earlier today on achshow.com. So please check that out. Also, I'm going to mention that this time next week, well, Saturday and Sunday, if you go over to my website, you will see that Peter will be speaking in London. And I'm going to give you those details again. It is... the advert is on the front page of the website, so I'll read it out for you. Orange Street Covenant Church, 11th and 12th of May 2024. On Saturday the 11th of May Peter will be speaking on at 3 p.m. on transforming terrorists into evangelists. And at 3 p.m. as well, on Sunday, 12th of May, a week from today, he'll be speaking on Reformation, Resistance and Revival Today. The description says, Dr. Peter Hammond, for over 38 years, has pioneered missionary outreaches, including into the war zones of Mozambique, Angola and Sudan. Often travelling by off-road motorbike, Peter's travelled hundreds of thousands of kilometres to deliver Bibles to persecuted Christians in Africa and Eastern Europe. In the course of his missionary activities, Peter has been ambushed, come under aerial and artillery bombardments, been stabbed, shot at, beaten by mobs, arrested and imprisoned. On some missions he has flown far into the Nuba Mountains in central Sudan with tons of Bibles, books and relief aid. He has walked throughout the war-devastated Nuba Mountains, showing the Jesus film in Arabic, proclaiming the gospel, training pastors and evading patrols. Now, admission is free. It is a church, but a free will offering will be received. All are welcome. The address is there. The website is orangestreetcovenantchurch.org.uk. They have an email. They have a telephone number as well. Just want to say I'm not going to be able to make it there, so if any of you were travelling hoping to meet me, I plan to meet Peter at another time, but I won't be there. But I hope that you take advantage, those of you who can get there. I have been to that church many, many years ago. I used to go quite regularly to their Sunday service that was in the morning. It's a very nice church. It's basically around the back of Leicester Square. So you'll have a lot to do when you get out of there or beforehand, lots of places where you can eat and what have you. Right in, the heart of London. So I hope that some of you listening that have the wherewithal and the means to get there, go there and get to hear Peter speak in person in the UK. Malificus, any comments before we move on?
Yeah, how amazing it would be to be sharing the same airspace as Peter. But unfortunately, it's a bit of a commute for me to do as well. And it's not so much the commute that's prohibitive, it's the cost of staying and that kind of thing. So, you know, people will know staying, an overnight stay in London is not cheap. So,
no, yes, indeed. There we go. And of course, Maleficus, it takes him like 9.5 hours to get there. So it's not the sort of thing that you're going to be able to do in a day and then turn around and go back again. It just would not be
safe. Have done London and back in a day to pick up my son for Christmas, and it was grueling.
Yeah, I can imagine it's tough indeed. So, yeah, well, anyway, what have I got here? Let me see. Well, I've been finishing putting things on my new shelving unit and having more shelves than I need. I found I could put some items for display on it. Anyway, I racked my brains and could not think of anything I wanted to buy, so I went through all the things I bought for sentimental reasons in the last few years, and they now adorn four shelves. The 1979 Microvision game, alongside a Galaxy Invader 1000. The two-screen Donkey Kong, alongside a Casio calculator with a boxing game on it, that I bought as I remember my father having one. The Matchbox cars I bought. You see, the way I see it is I've made my bed and now I'm going to have to lie in it. And that is not a metaphor in this instance, Maleficus, when you consider my bed is situated directly under the four shelves that I have just described. Any comments?
Yeah, do you know what? The two-screen Donkey Kong, I used to have one of those. Don't know what happened to it. I think I might have spilled orange juice or something on it as a kid. But one thing I do still own, Andy, is the very original Game & Watch two-screen Nintendo Zelda game. Zelda's a big franchise now. And my daughter is absolutely enamored with the Zelda franchise. She loves the games. And when I told her I had the original and put it in front of her, she couldn't believe what she was looking at. So, yeah, to hear you've got the Donkey Kong thing there, that brings back some memories for me, for sure.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. And the other thing that I've been up to, I go around, Amanda always likes looking at the charity shops, you know, second-hand shops over here, and I very rarely buy stuff there. But yesterday, I bought a variety of things. You get roped into things sometimes. I'll give you an idea. I forget the title of the film. I remember it was a 2001 film, and it's a Coen Brothers film, you know, did The Big Lebowski and Blood Simple and stuff. A lot of their films are very good, Fargo, things like that. But a lot of their films I'm not interested in. And it was only 50p. It was from 2001. It had Billy Bob Thornton in it, and it had James Gandolfini in it. So that was while Gandolfini was doing the Sopranos, the early years of the Sopranos. So he was already famous. But even with that, it's like 50p, it's 2 hours, and it's like, it's not the 50p, it's the fact that I'm going to have to commit to watching this for 2 hours. And I remember distinctly, I've been through their filmography, I've looked at all the stuff that interests me, and a lot of their films don't. I remember I saw a film, I think you might have seen it and liked it, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, I remember that film.
I couldn't stand it, Man of Constant Sorrow. You liked it, I couldn't stand it, and it's like, they're the sort of people that when they do stuff I like, they tend to be very good. But when they do stuff that I'm not interested in, I really am not interested in it. The reason I mention it is, it probably happens for you wherever you are around the world in some of these sort of secondhand shops. The prices vary. And sometimes you just want to get shot of stuff. So I was in one shop and it was 5 CDs for £1. So what did I end up with here? Well, one of them's a CD single, Gabrielle's Dreams. So I got that. That's from 1993. Quite a nice song. I think it was a number one. There was the Best of REM in there, called In Time 1988 to 2003. And I was going through that yesterday because I've actually got quite a few REM albums. But what have I got? The songs that I've saved from them, there's only 11. Pop Song 89, Stand, Orange Crush, Radio Song, Losing My Religion, Near Wild Heaven, Shiny Happy People, Me and Honey, What's the Frequency, Kenneth and Star 69. Well, that's 10. I found an 11th one on this Greatest Hits album. And I was hoping when I picked this up, I could actually get rid of some of these albums, because I knew I only had a handful of REM songs, but virtually every album is represented on this Greatest Hits that I've got, but not every song that I've saved from each album, so I've got to keep all of them, and even keep this one, because on these 18 tracks on this Best Of, there was only one I liked that I hadn't heard before, and that was the Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight from the Automatic for the People album. So, Maleficus, any thoughts on REM? Ever liked them at all?
The Shiny Happy People came out, I think, the year I left school or the year before I left school. And it was so overplayed, like ridiculously overplayed, that it really turned me off to REM. So, and then the Losing My Religion track, which went absolutely viral in this country. I don't know how it did over in the States. But I know everyone likes a depressing song, yeah. But yo, another one that just got completely overplayed, and I just it just turned me off to REM altogether. So was never a big fan.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because this collection opens up with "Man on the Moon," which is a famous song of theirs. But I'm listening to it, and the chorus is good, but the verses are just so boring, and I can't be bothered with it. So, you know, the stuff I like of theirs are quite poppy. Funnily enough, the first song, Pop Song 89, which is the oldest song of theirs I own, I heard it on a Beavis and Butthead episode, and I thought, this is really catchy, this is really good. And just off that one song, I bought the Green album, which was the only one of theirs I think I had at that time. And then the others that I've got the tracks from are Out of Time and Automatic for the People and Monster. And that's kind of where I tuned out. But the other thing that I picked up, again in this £5 for £1, is the Pulp Fiction motion picture soundtrack. Now, I saw Reservoir Dogs. It was very big. I think it was bigger in the UK than it was. It became a cult in the UK before it did in the US. So the UK kind of propelled Tarantino into stardom, and then the US started reevaluating the movie. When Pulp Fiction was coming out, there was a lot of hype surrounding it. And I actually bought the soundtrack on cassette before I saw the film. So the soundtrack came out on cassette before the film was released in the UK. Because I thought, I'll start listening to the soundtrack, because I loved the Reservoir Dogs soundtrack so much. Literally kept every track of that. I played this again yesterday. Only one track off there did I want to keep, and that was Son of a Preacher Man by Dusty Springfield. The other stuff...
Okay.
you remember that song, but I wasn't really into the rest of it. Any comments on that, Maleficus?
Well, I have to say, the Pulp Fiction album, what an album. And I love the fact that there's little clips of the film, you know, in between the tracks. I mean, the first opening track, and it's got the hold up in the restaurant. And it sort of reminds me a little bit of, what was the little black lady's name out of Police Academy? The one who was really meek and really, really quiet until... Yeah, sort of reminds me of that. I have to say there are a lot of tracks off that album that I really like, and one of my favorite tracks is Love is a Red Dress. I think that's a fantastic tune, and the woman that sung it is actually really, really talented lady. She did she's got an amazing voice, and I think she had a bit of a pop career, you know, and I believe the track that Tarantino used on the actual album on the movie was actually only a demo of the track, I believe. Anyway, but I can't remember her name now, but she also
I've got it her here. Most favorite it says
her most favorite track was her most famous track was Show Me Heaven. That was the commercial one that she did.
It says here performed by Maria McKee.
That's the one.
Because I've got the CD here in my hand. So, yeah, well, that's interesting, because the Reservoir Dogs does it in the same way. You've got clips of the movie going throughout the soundtrack, and you've also got clips from the guy who does the radio voiceovers on the movie, who's got that really sort of strange sort of drawl type voice. I think he had his own radio show in real life. I just enjoyed the music more on that. When I listened to it again yesterday, definitely as I get older, I'm becoming a lot more, in some ways, stuff like that, I'm looking not to like it rather than to like it. So maybe I've not given it, you know, quite the time I should have done. Also got hold of, spent a couple of pounds on School Reunion, the 80s, 3 CDs, 60 hits, and I paid £2 just for Maria Vidal's Body Rock, which I've never seen on any other 80s CD set, and I've got loads of them. But I played that, and it wasn't as good as I remember it, but £2 just to get that one song. And then I got Joan Armour Trading. There was another shop I was in. Two for a pound. Joan Armour Trading, Love and Affection, the very best of. And I played that yesterday night. That was the last thing I was listening to before... the last thing I put on before I go to bed is some John Carpenter music from his horror films. That's a bit grisly, isn't it? But I'm a ghoul, folks. But I put that on. I need something quiet, nothing with words in it, people singing. I need something to... instrumental, I'll get the word right eventually, instrumental as the last thing I listen to before I go to bed to wind down. Started it yesterday, finished it this morning. Apart from Drop the Pilot, which I really love, there's some stuff in there that I could listen to again and maybe get into more, but I can't be bothered. On the contrary of that, I found The Magic of Boney M. And I did a show about a year ago. It was one of the Saturday shows that we always try and coincide and with a historical event in the title that we never talk about in the show. So anyone who listens to it based upon the title is going to be very disappointed. But it was Rasputin's birthday, and there's a song called Rasputin by Boney M, which I think is one of my favourite songs, and there is a video online at a festival, and I've queued this up because I'm going to include this in the post for the show, and I think that this live version is better than the studio version, and that's very rare. Studio versions are generally better than live. I mean, it stands to reason that live you have one opportunity to do it, but studio you can do take after take and stuff like that. But this is Rasputin at the Sopot Festival 1979, and I'm going to play about 40 seconds of it. It's off YouTube, but folks, I really urge you to watch it on YouTube, because even if you're not a fan of music, the male singer, I think the band was one male singer and three female singers, he does this dance during the song, and it's just absolutely hilarious. But here's a section that the other thing I wanted to mention is the good thing about this song is that it's, if you aware of Rasputin, but you don't read books about him, they tell you the whole story of him in this song, to the extent that I'm most disappointed that whilst I was still doing guest shows, I didn't actually do a show with Russian expert Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, in which I played him Boney M's Rasputin, and then he could verify elements of it that were true and were not from the song, because we know how the mainstream can differ from real history. But you never know, might get that opportunity in the future. But here's a few seconds, or 40 seconds or so, of Rasputin. Have a listen to this, folks. Go and folks, the guy jumping around, please just give that a watch, you won't be disappointed. The rest of the album struck out to me. There's not that sort of head and shoulders above where I've got to. I do like them still, things like Rivers of Babylon, Brown Girl in the Ring. That's my preferred black music. For example, I don't imagine that you would find Mary's Boy Child, Oh My Lord, on a Cypress Hill album. But also, No Woman, No Cry, they do a cover version of that, which I think would have fitted in better on the Joan Armour Trading CD, but we'll just leave that there. And then there's a few other songs that come up after that. That I haven't quite finished. So after the show, I will be finishing this CD. And I have the last one that was in the Five for a Pound section. Best of Stereophonics, Decade in the Sun. Now, there's only one Stereophonics track that I know, and that's Have a Nice Day. And I've got the album that's off, so this will be replacing that. Maleficus, do you know... The only other thing I know about Stereophonics is... I was watching the start of an England cricket match once, and Michael Atherton was on the pitch, and I forget where it was, but he said, this recently here we had a Stereophonics concert, and he turned around to Geoffrey Boycott. He said, do you like the Stereophonics, Geoffrey? And he said, I assume you're talking about some kind of pop group, and no. But Maleficus, can you tell us anything about the Stereophonics? Over to you.
Yeah, I can't stand them. That was another band that was rammed down my throat as a kid, and I had various friends that were really into them. I've got friends that are still into them now. The first band I was ever in, we did a cover of a tune called A Thousand Trees, and because Stereophonics is a three-piece band, I took that opportunity in the middle of our set to walk up to the bar and get another pint and watch them play it and rejoin for the next song. So, yeah. But going back to Joan Armour Trading, one of my all-time favourite songs is by Joan Armour Trading, and it's a song called Opportunity. And not only has it got incredibly good guitar work on it, but I love the story it tells. I love storytelling in songs, and that story is about an innocent girl who gets swept along, swept up to make easy money doing a burglary, and it all goes a little bit wrong at the end of the song. I love storytelling in songs. So, yeah, Joan Armour Trading, Opportunity, one of my all-time favourite songs.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's not on this collection, and they've...
No, what a shame. I'll have to send it to you after the show.
Well, it's got 18 songs on it, and it's got Love and Affection twice, and that's probably our big hit. That's the first track, obviously the original, and the final track, which is Live on Later with Jules Holland. But I don't know why they wanted to include that when they could include other stuff. But And A Thousand Trees, you'll be pleased to hear, Mellifluous is on this Best of Stereophonics. So I'll be sampling that myself later, probably while I'm drinking a beer as well, just for a change. But anyway, that being said, today's top story, well, it is for the Daily Star Sunday, as it is their front page headline, Ghostly Old Bloke Vanishes Through Brick Wall. And basically, Gary Newman saw a ghost on the London Underground. And in boxing news, Saul Canelo Alvarez just beat Jame Live Dog Munguia. Okay, so let's move on to... Oh, the People's Voice shows in the last week, which you can find on their Rumble channel. And just a word of warning, Wikipedia claims the People's Voice is an, and I quote, American fake news website. So let's go over to the People's Voice in my little radio section of my browser here. And go from, where are we? Right, here we are. So, looks like there's five in the last... No, we covered, there's four in the last week, so most recent first. Doctors ordered to euthanise millions of vaccinated patients to cover up disturbing side effects. Then we've got Epstein torture victim exposes VIPs who rape and torture kids for Satan. Then we've got Gates insider admits elite planning to euthanise billions via bird flu vaccine. That is one that I saved. And then we've got top doctor blows the whistle. Chemicals in vaccines are turning kids trans. So, as I say, there's some things there you might want to look at. You might not want to look at, but it's the People's Choice Rumble channel. And now for this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment of the show, which is brought to you courtesy of the British justice system. Sven Longshanks was sent to prison for 2.5 years on May the 15th, 2023, for comments he made on his radio show, the archives of which are still available on RadioAlbin.com, a station you could simply stop listening to if you chose to do so, in the same way I stopped listening to the BBC over a year ago when I chose not to renew my television licence. So here are this week's People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It. First up, Daily Mail headline, criminology student 25 who tried to frame her own sister after being caught drug driving at 100 miles per hour is spared jail after her sibling told judge she had forgiven her. Next, The Courier, dealer who tried to flee Dundee drug bust with £40,000 in cash avoids jail. Next, Health and Safety Matters. That's a new publication for us. Rogue trader spared jail following unsafe gas work. Next, The Independent. Met police officer who punched medical worker after mistaking him for suspect avoids jail. And finally, Surrey Live. Surrey woman who smuggled 18 suitcases of £6.8 million of dirty cash from Heathrow to Dubai avoids jail. Whilst I could present many, many more headlines, that concludes this week's The People Who Failed to Join Sven Longshanks in Prison and How They Did It segment. But Mellifluous, do you have any headlines for us before we close it up? Over to you.
I do. I've just killed one of them because you've just read one of them out. But anyway, I have plenty more. 15-year-old gunman spared prison. Yes, a little child who brandished a fake gun sparked an armed police response. So there you go. He's avoided prison, so he should, really, to be fair. Norfolk bird collecting addict. 71 years old, spared jail over illegal collection. So this man was addicted to collecting bird, Eve. Hundreds of the bloody things. And yeah, he's been spared jail. I'm assuming some of these are rare bird eggs as well. So no jail for Slough man who drove dangerously with the child in his car. Man caught with child and animal abuse images spared jail term. And, well, yeah, that sums it up for me, because I did have the other one, but you've already read it out, Andy. So there you go. And Sven Longshanks is still in prison for speaking, folks.
Yeah, it's worth really thinking about these headlines, folks, that we put out for you. I mean, the one that kind of jumped out to me most of all was a rogue trader spared jail following unsafe gas work. So who's more dangerous here? Someone that botches up a gas job that someone could light a match and blow people up with, presumably, or someone who has a radio show that you can choose to click on and download if you want or not? It's pretty obvious where the priorities of the powers that should not be are, isn't it?
Okay. Well, I mean, it could be even worse with the gas guy, because it might not be so much gas leaks, but if the carbon monoxide and everything isn't vented properly, which is probably what it was, that's a killer. That's a silent killer. You can kill a whole house full of people in one fell swoop, one evening.
There was a guy, and it was, it sounds like quite a funny story, but some kid was killed when it happened. But he was drunk and all this sort of stuff, and he was depressed, and he filled his house with gas. And then he sort of thought better of it, was going to kill himself and all that, and then he just, you know, left it for a day or what have you. And he decided it was all right to have a fag. And when he lit his cigarette, the gas doesn't disperse quite as quickly, and it just... This guy, you know, he ended up with life-changing injuries. It killed a kid next door and stuff like that. But yeah, that's kind of something that brings to mind, came to my mind when I saw that story. But anyway, I said that we'd get back to vaccines later in the show. Malefkas and I both stumbled upon this headline. Malefkas had it in his Great Distraction. I originally had it in my articles that didn't make it past the Mail Plus paywall, or out of the Mail Plus paywall. And I thought it was worth us having a chat about it. Malefkas is more of an expert on this stuff than me, and he's got more direct experiences with it. But it's a Daily Mail article. I'll include it in the post for this show. The headline reads, AstraZeneca admits for first time its COVID vaccine can cause rare side effect, intense legal fight with victims of defective jab. And here's my scripted response. So for me, this should mean any employer who threatened their staff with dismissal if they did not take the jab should be held responsible for any injuries caused, as should the government and media that not only promoted it, but lambasted those of us who didn't want it. At the very least, it should serve as a precedent that no vaccine should be mandated upon anyone at any time in the future. But what are your thoughts, Malefkas? Over to you.
Absolutely. No vaccine should be mandated for any reason whatsoever. As you and regular listeners will know, I lost my job because I refused to have a vaccination over here. This comes coupled with also, Andy, not forgetting the article I talked about with you just before the show. So this is, as I say, what's the difference between the mainstream and the independent media? 6 months to 2 years, depending on the subject matter. So here you go. Mail Online article here. Neurosurgeon, 37, and nurse, 54, claim they were left brain damaged and paralyzed from COVID vaccines, as they say they've been dismissed and gaslighted as anti-vaxxers. Now, I've sent you the link to put that in the show post. If anyone wants to go through that, it's not just those two. There's a whole list of different people on that article. There's at least four different people that have suffered. So, as I say, this is all going mainstream. It's all going mainstream. Is this because they can't keep the lid on it? Or is this because they want us to be angry about it? The fact of the matter is, you know, as I say, I lost my job as a result of it, as a result of these measures that were brought in. And don't get me wrong, I haven't looked back. I enjoy being self-employed. I took that decision because I didn't want these decisions to be made again or intensified. If I got another job somewhere else, I didn't want more restrictions to come in. That's why I went self-employed. I haven't looked back, but I should never have been put in that position in the first place. And rightly so. I was right, wasn't I? We were right, Andy. All you listeners out there were right. It's all coming out now. It's all coming out. So, I do think Barchester Healthcare should be held accountable for the, 20% of staff, I think, that they sacked on the morning. You know, they sacked on the very same morning. I'm just going to reiterate this because, we always say, radio is a little bit of repetition. When I got my marching orders from Barchester Healthcare, they came through the post a recorded delivery, and it was a big wadge of paper, and it consisted of all the notes, all the minutes that had been taken from every meeting that I personally had gone to, and it had all the notes, all the minutes, everything taken from all the meetings, and all the measures that they put into place, and all the information that they sent out. Big thick wadge of paper, probably I would say about 20 millimeters thick, sent through the post to me, recorded delivery. Now, that wouldn't have been cheap simply for me, but Barchester actually at the time employed something like between 15 and 17,000 staff across the UK. So you can imagine what 10 or 20% of that is. Imagine how much that would have cost just in legal fees to get that all together, get all the T's crossed and the I's dotted to make sure that they were watertight. All that paperwork came through to every single employee that was being sacked on exactly the same morning, and it was the same morning that the government released their statement saying that they were going to make the jab mandatory for care staff. And there was a statement from Pete Calverley, the then CEO of Barchester Healthcare, saying, we've been engaging, a quote saying, we've been engaging with our staff since February, and we're now happy to say that 99% of our staff are fully up to date on their vaccines. So on their COVID shots, that's what he was talking about. Now, that statement released that morning by the government would have only been true that morning, because none of us were sacked until that morning. So contrived? I think so. It's all coming out in the wash now, though, isn't it, Andy? We were right.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate the other article that Malificus found himself. Give you the headline again. This will be available in the post for the show. Neurosurgeon 37 and nurse 54 claim they were left brain damaged and paralysed from COVID vaccines, as they say they've been dismissed and gaslighted as anti-vaxxers. And there is one show that I tend to listen to each week, Fockham Hall Radio. And they say that whenever they're talking about they can't say vaccine or COVID, they don't say the words because otherwise they risk being censored from YouTube. I believe it's similar on Facebook. So even with all this information now making it into the mainstream media, I don't believe, certainly the users of those platforms are still worried about mentioning the very word. And again, you have to ask yourself, what sort of platform would censor a word like vaccine or COVID? Why would they do that unless they were aware that there was more to it than the public were being told, and they didn't want anything other than the scripted mainstream narrative going out? That's an opinion, but, you know, as I said earlier in the show, why would you do that sort of censorship? You know, truth does not fear investigation, does it? So when you see the censorship come up, it just makes them look guilty. I think that I can speak for most people when I say that. Malificus, any thoughts?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely bang on. But, you know, as I say, why do they... This is what irritates me. The independent media is quite often used by these people to plant seeds in the public mind, plant seeds of doubt, so that a year and a half, 2 years later, when they come out and actually tell the truth, the shock value to the public mind is not nearly as great. You're sort of already eased into the idea. And it's the anecdote I always tell about the car factory. They send a rumor that they're going to lose 2,000 jobs. And then they put out another rumor saying, oh, no, that's just nonsense. That's not going to happen. And then a week or two later, 500 jobs are lost. And the effect on the worker is, oh, I'm going to lose my job. Oh, no, I'm not going to lose my job. Oh, I nearly lost my job. That's not so bad, is it? Only 500 of us.
Yeah, and I had that exact same... That went through my mind when I was working as a union representative. I thought, I see what's going on here. They actually want to get rid of 1,000 people, but they'll come out with 3,000 first. And then the union goes in, and then they come out, oh, it's only 1,000. So, you know, all you paid your money into the union, it shows that we're doing a job. It shows that the company listened to us. But if I was the head of that company and I wanted to get rid of 1,000 people, I'd just go out and say, I want to get rid of 3,000 initially. So it looks like you've given them some sort of leeway. That's the way I do it. And I found it interesting that the head of the union had a meeting with the chief executive. I think it was either once a month or once every 2 weeks, and it was a private meeting between the two of them. And I was like, I don't know, maybe it was all above board and that, but I was very suspicious as to what went on there. It seems a bit odd to me. So
it's called managing expectations. It's called cushioning public opinion. You know, that's what it's about. And so it irritates me. What really irritates me is that obviously the independent media, people who are free thinkers, people, and I know there's some bad eggs in the independent media, but free thinking people, by and large, go out and they do their investigative bit themselves. They look into it themselves. They tell people what they see. And, you know, it's not good enough for anyone unless the mainstream media say it. And now, oh, yeah, look. You know, Andy and Mr. Scott were right. Yeah. Well, thanks. That's done us a great lot of good, hasn't it? 2 years down the line.
Yeah. And you think of how lucky, really. I mean, it's a, you know, bit of a strange word to use, but all of us, I mean, my own girlfriend's fully jabbed, as are her family. So it's been right close to me. I'm sure many of you, but I know people that really didn't want to get it. But they got it because they'd rather take their chances than, you know, potentially lose a job or things like that, or, you know, someone wanted to go on holiday, you know, different things like that. I don't know any of them that have had side effects, personally. So, you know, they've been lucky, but then there are people that you hear of all over the independent media, alternative media, whatever you want to call it, who say that these will happen in the years to come. And we're certainly, if you follow Erica Khan on the Jeff Wrench Show every week, I think she's on at least three times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, I believe, they actually make it a personal quest of theirs not to forget the vaccine injured. So in at least one of those shows, they will give accounts of people who claim vaccine injuries and their symptoms, because they feel that these people should not be forgotten. And they have a moral duty to bring that information out. And I find it difficult sometimes to listen to it, but I think that they're doing an exercise in morality in what they're doing, in the same way as we keep things like the Sven Longshanks situation alive, just to remind people of how they don't want you to have free speech and how they regard anyone who says some things that they don't like as far more dangerous than someone who does things that are far more dangerous to the community at large. Because the law is not to protect the community at large. The law is designed to protect the powers that should not be. And that's why it's increasingly being known as lawfare. But that being said, as of December the 1st, 2022, we have a total of 2,362 people having died after taking the fake vaccine and 474,018 people having been injured after taking the fake vaccine. These figures were published on the British government's website page entitled Coronavirus COVID-19 Vaccine Adverse Reactions and were aggregated from the totals of the five vaccine analysis prints linked to on that page. I say were because the British government are no longer publishing these, as whilst their website page still exists, the five vaccine analysis prints have now been deleted from it, so I have absolutely no idea of the official figures today. Okay, so now let's go over to Malificus for his The Great Distraction segment of the show. Malificus, what have you got for us today?
It's funny you mention, thanks Andy, yeah. So it's funny you mention that the People's Voice thing about the bird flu vaccine. So Mail Online article here. I'm the CDC's top bird flu expert, and this is why I'm losing sleep over the H5N1 outbreak tearing through US farms. Right. So then on the flip side over here in the UK, you know, be afraid, people, be very afraid. You know, I remember when my young lad was in primary school when we last had the whole bird flu nonsense, you know, thrown around. So here we go. Article from The Telegraph here in the UK. UK ramps up response to H5N1 outbreaks in US cattle, but refuses to test British cows. Maybe the US haven't sent over the very specific tests that we need just yet. You know, rather like we were using a not fit for purpose test to discover whether we had COVID or not. So anyway, obviously, I've got the articles there. The AstraZeneca admits for the first time COVID vaccine can cause rare side effect, and obviously the neurosurgeon one. So how about this one? This comes from the Telegraph as well. The US shared gobsmacking, quote unquote, COVID lab leak file with the UK. Evidence supporting the theory was presented to Dominic Raab, the then Foreign Secretary, but it was ignored. Andy, oh, look, this is incompetence. It must be incompetence. No planning involved there. Must be incompetence, Andy. And as you say, Occam's razor would suggest that if it was purely incompetence, surely they would make a mistake in our favour once in a while. But obviously they didn't.
Indeed.
So, yeah. So here you go. Here's, you know, all this rising cancer, Andy, nothing to do with lockdowns, nothing to do with the vaccinations. Indoor climbing wall users may be breathing in toxic rubber dust linked to cancer. So there you go. There's a there's another excuse coming out of the mainstream media. I'm not saying their statement isn't true, but what does it do to the public mind? Okay, so here you go. Article from the Guardian here. No one's being honest about it. How the NHS crisis forces patients to go private. So the NHS National Health Service over here is free at the point of delivery because we pay for it via our national insurance contributions, supposedly. So national insurance over here is kind of just like, well, it's just another tax, basically, but it goes towards specific things like the NHS and things. So there you go. They're saying, you know, no one's being honest about it. The NHS crisis forces patients to go private. So, you know, just think of that as the headline effect on the public mind. You then have a thing here from PF Media. Prescribing pharmacists, a game changer in the UK healthcare market. So what they're talking about is pharmacists in pharmacies or drugstores, as you would call them over in the US. The pharmacist is being given more powers over here to prescribe different drugs that you would normally have to go to a doctor for. So that's one of the ways they're dealing with this NHS crisis. there's an online magazine here called Home Care Insight, and it says, does British public's record annual health spend prove that the NHS is dead? Last year, the UK spent £8.6 billion on pharmaceutical products such as medicines, vaccines and vitamins. Now, as I've said many times on this show before, the NHS will pay up to £3.50 for a packet of paracetamol that I can go down to the local shop, not even a drugstore, just the local shop, and pay 28-29p for. So that explains to you why the budget, quote unquote, is so high. But don't worry, Andy, because an article here from pharmaforum.com says healthcare AI from Sera could save the NHS and the UK $1 billion a year. There you go. And also here, government article from www.gov.uk. The MHRA's AI regulatory strategy ensures patient safety and industry innovation into 2030. So yes, we're making sure that AI and AI strategy and patient safety industry innovation, that's all to be set up by 2030, keeping us safe with AI, folks. It's all on the cards. Now, I've been emailed and spoken to even by my father. Isn't it great news, Andy, that changes in the NHS will mean that women-only wards will be for single sex rather than single gender? So a landmark case here, basically saying that the NHS to enshrine biological sex in its constitution. So if you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman, apparently. And the government website here NHS Constitution plans to strengthen privacy and dignity and safety. Proposed updates to the NHS Constitution for England will reflect biological needs of patients to empower people to request same-sex wards. So it's nothing actually to do with the policy. This, everyone's hailing this as some sort of victory, right? So if you Google, sorry, my dog's just barking out, so I'm just going to let him in to put him out of his misery. There you go. Come on, lad. if you Google NHS and gender, there are, as far as the NHS is concerned, still six nuances to gender that they refer to. Binary, non-binary, yada, yada, yada. It's all still there. What are the six gender identities for the NHS? Woman, man, non-binary, genderqueer, gender fluid, transgender, attracted to someone of the same sex, attracted to someone of the opposite sex, or both sexes. So they're not enshrining anything. They're still carrying on with the quote unquote nonsense. That's my opinion and I'm sticking to it. Sorry if that offends anyone. They're still, you know, they're still going along with it all. What it basically means is that if someone goes in and says, I don't want to be on a ward with if a lady goes in and says, I don't want to be on a ward with any men, they have to be put in with other women, biological women. That's it. Doesn't mean that the NHS has struck a blow to the gender ideology squad. So I just want to clarify that for all you people that have sent me emails saying, oh, isn't this great news? No, it doesn't actually mean an awful lot. And when it gets really busy, like the NHS is stretched to capacity, do you think they're going to have spare wards? You know, sorry, we would like to put you on an all-female ward, but we don't have the bed space at the moment, so you're in with the blokes and the trannies. Is that all right? You know, that's how it's going to be. So, and final thing here on the great distraction: should medical cannabis be more available in the UK? And the reason I bring this up is because cannabis has just been made legal in Germany to grow. My German friend contacted me over the weekend and said, you're a gardener. He said, they've just made cannabis legal and I've bought two seeds. He said, what do I do with them? So it's already come to places in America and Canada, and now it's sweeping into Europe. And pretty soon, obviously, with articles like this, folks, it will be sweeping into England as well. Without medical cannabis, my chronic pain would stop me playing with my grandchildren. So there you go. Sympathy vote, sympathy vote, sympathy vote. I have to say, as someone that doesn't mind the odd puff on a joint here or there, you know, at a party or whatever, I'm not adverse to it. I don't mind and I don't judge people for it. But I don't think it's a healthy thing for people, most people, to do every day. I really don't. So I don't think it would be a good thing for society. I think society would become far more easily governable and would acquiesce through lackadaisical impulse, i.e. people just couldn't be bothered to kick up a fuss when, say, for instance, jabs became mandatory for this, that or the other. So that's my opinion on it, and I'm sticking to it. Back to you, Andy.
It's funny, Maleficus, because there was a guy that I was in a house share, one of the first places I moved out because I couldn't afford to rent on my own. There was a guy there, there were three of us, so we had a three-bedroom flat. It was on a council estate, so it's like the projects in America, so it was cheaper. And one of the guys, he said to me that he had never not had a marijuana or something in his pocket for the last 15 years, and I'm going back to the 1990 95 96 97, something like that,
right?
But he went to like a fee-paying school, so funnily enough, he went to the one I was going to go to when I decided to go back to a state school, because I didn't want to do the fee-paying school hours of 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, 8 to 4 on Saturday, and then every other Sunday. Didn't fancy that. But even doing that to the age of 18, with this habit, he talked really slowly with like a drawl. And so it was like doing it every day. And I think it does have a knock-on effect in the brain, unless he had some other condition that that caused that. But he certainly can't blame his background or education on it. And the other thing I always like about when you hear people who are pro cannabis or marijuana, They talk about, you know, hemp and how good hemp is and how you can use it for rope, and people have even built cars out of it. And my immediate response is, yeah, so why is it that all you're interested in is smoking it then? But I've heard that argument so much from people who have only, that I'm aware of, ever used it for smoking. I've never seen them trying to make rope out of it or build anything out of it or stuff like that. And with regard to what Meliscus
was... good point.
and this is, I'm not joking here, folks, we're not joking there either, but the term binary and non-binary, I actually don't know what it means. And I'm not even going to ask Meliscus to tell me because I'm not interested. In the same way that I don't know what pronouns mean, or nouns, or verbs, or adverbs, or adjectives, and all that. And you might think, well, you're definitely talking rubbish now. Well, I was taught that when I was younger. I was taught a lot of things when I was younger that I've forgotten. Now, yeah, I've written a couple of books, but if the sentence makes sense, I look up the facts that I'm writing about, make sure I get them all in, and make sure the sentence makes sense. I remember one of the books that I did, I was sort of jumping about, sometimes talking about things in the past, in the future, even difficult to explain, but it wasn't in the same tense going through the book, and so it didn't flow properly. And I had to go through the whole book again, making it in the same, is it writing in the first person, the second person, something like that? I forget what it was, but it wasn't making sense. So all these different things, I'm obviously using verbs, nouns, adverbs, pronouns, adjectives, but I don't identify which of word is a verb or a noun or stuff like that. It either makes sense or it doesn't make sense. In the same way I was talking earlier in the show about that song The Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight by REM. Now, that was the only song on the album that I recognised that I'd heard before that I liked that I didn't have. I didn't even know it was by them. Okay? And so I'm like, well, I'll have that off this CD and I'll put that in my REM folder, which I've done. So it does annoy me, but not so much from someone like myself. But when you get older people that are basically expected to accept all these new terms, and I'm aware of situations where, you know, an older person said something that was quite acceptable to be said, you know, 20, maybe even 10 years ago, and they're being arrested for it because they're expected to keep up with what's going on in society, and they have to constantly change their background and their behavior, because of course their background, what they were educated to, how they were educated to behave, is very different to how people are being educated to behave now. And so there should be respect for their background as there is to these other people, but that is not the case. People are just expected to constantly learn new propaganda put out by the powers that should not be. And if they say anything that could be deemed to fall foul of these new laws that they shouldn't have to in their retirement keep up with, then they could then be prosecuted for it. I think that for me is the greatest casualty of the woke culture, and it's an absolute disgrace when we're taught in the Bible that we should respect our elders, and it's certainly not respecting our elders when we're expecting them to keep up with the times, whether they agree with them or not. And if they, as I've just made that point, Meliscus, any comments on that before we move on?
Well, yeah, I think the bigger travesty, in actual fact, as my English teaching friend points out, is that for somebody to call themselves they or them is a dreadful abuse of grammar. Do you know how long it's taken us to evolve our language into the state that it is? And not only have we got people now using single letters and numbers because it's easier to write for text messages, but we've now got the abuse of our language has gone that far that single entities can call themselves them or they. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah. Okay, we're coming towards the end of the show. It's been a longer show. For those of you outside of the UK, it is actually a bank holiday this weekend, which means you get the first... There's a bank holiday in the first Monday of May, and I believe the last Monday of May, and of course we're coming to the first one. I don't work Mondays generally anyway. It's actually my official day off where I'm here on my own. Meliscus, are you doing anything?
I am working. I don't get paid double, but I'm working for a lovely little old lady who, you know, it's, you know, when you go self-employed, particularly with things like gardening and everything, it's you end up after a few years, or I've ended up after a few years, with a bunch of clients that I really like. Well, I love and respect. And I don't care that it's bank holiday. It's just another day tomorrow. I'm going down to help out the little old lady with her garden. So with her, a little old lady with her huge garden, should I say, because she can't do it on her own, you know. So,
yeah,
that's just well, that's where I am with it.
Yeah. And when I was doing the shows every day of the year, I was working most days anyway. And now, of course, most of my stuff is sent around the end of the week, which is when I spend time sleeping over at in my mum's house, and there's still so much to do there. There's just, I can't see, you know, where it's going to end. I can imagine this going on for at least a year before I get the house all kind of cleared out of stuff that we don't need and stuff like that, and hopefully find some things that appear to have gone missing on the way. But anyway, let's go over to, well, it's time for some of this week's Daily Mail articles that didn't end up behind their Mail Plus paywall. First up, can you tell who they are? Artist digitally envisions what celebrities would look like as the opposite gender. Next, Fury. As memorial to 6 million Jews killed in Holocaust is covered up and guarded by police in London's Hyde Park over fears it will be vandalised by pro-Palestine activists. Next, axed Match of the Day pundit Mark Lawrenson says the BBC is top of the woke league and got rid of him because I was 65 and white. Next, even the Sun came out to congratulate William and Kate on the anniversary of their wedding. We remember the A to Z of a touching moment and a glorious occasion. Next, now crackhead Barney claims Alex Baldwin maimed her during coffee shop confrontation as she appears in surreal interview wearing a diaper and no bra. She wants looking at. Next, US accuses Israeli military units of gross human rights violations in stunning condemnation of troops during negotiations over a Gaza ceasefire deal. Next, the end of childhood jabs. Vaccines can be given through plasters which painlessly penetrate the skin. Next, how M&S is luring in young customers with their delicious magic coffee, which fans say is the best on the high street, as other chains see prices soar to an eye-watering £5. Now, folks, if you, anyone familiar with the Daily Mail, when you scroll through the website, you have certain things that are labelled advertising feature. This was not one of them. And finally, Israel is accused of possible war crime after 8-year-old West Bank boy is shot in the head and killed as he ran away from the IDF. Okay, that's almost it for me. So, Malificus, please close out your contribution to today's show with your news roundup of the week. The floor is yours.
A possible war crime. Wow. Okay. That's yeah. that's an interesting use of the English language again, isn't it? There we go. Anyway, how about this, Andy? Government makes next set of crucial changes to improve biosecurity at the UK's trade border. Not bothered about all the people coming over on boats, though, are they? You know, not being funny, but you're far more likely to carry over illnesses and diseases on a living thing than you are on a, you know, on the surface of an inanimate object. Anyway. I don't know whether you heard about this, Annie, you probably did. This is an article from Politico EU. UK's climate plan ruled unlawful. So this, you guys over in the States and overseas may have heard about this, but the UK's government has been slammed in recent days because their net zero by 2030 plan that's been put into place and okayed by the government and supported by the government has been declared unlawful because they haven't actually said how they're going to do it. There's no plans put into places exactly how they're going to do it, but we know, Andy, that we will be net zero by 2030. What an absolute load of nonsense. this is the sort of thing that really irritates me, and people don't get it. People think that I'm being misogynistic or whatever, or being a bit Victorian. Thousands of parents of two-year-olds benefit from 15 hours free childcare, and here's how. This comes from the Education Hub, blog.gov.uk, so another government website. So this is just another way of forcing women out of the home, back into the workplace, in my opinion. And the fact that the government are prepared to offer 15 hours free childcare a week basically means that you can work the 15 hours that we want you to work. You'll be taxed upon and blah, 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 blah. If you want part of our system, i.e. when you have kids, you're signed up to what used to be working tax credit and child benefit and things like that. If you want to be participated or if you want this to be entitled to this, you know, you've got to go out and work for it. So in order that the government can give out money, they're giving out more money to stop people from staying at home and looking after their children. People don't look at it in that way. I do. So I just thought that was an interesting thing from the UK government there. So remember us saying last week about how, you know, Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine is going to have dreadful environmental impacts and stuff. And then afterwards I said, and the UK is putting loads more, you know, a record amount of funding into Ukraine's military, etc., etc. So here we go. Defense sector continues contributing significantly to the UK economy. Well, no surprise there, is there? Because we're making loads of weapons and sending them out to Ukraine. Is that how we're going to get our economy out of the quagmire? Is it? We're just, you know, as you know, and we're going to go back to a very old book called War is a Racket. It's reminiscent of that, don't you think, Andy?
Yeah, it's funny because I've been looking at my books, and that's one of them. I had a copy that the Barnes Review republished as a free supplement to one of their editions. I've got their publications because when I used to do shows for them, I used to interview all the contributors to each. I think it came out every 2 months, each issue that wanted to be interviewed on their article. And I saw that the other day when I was going through my books and bringing some more back here. Nearly done with that. Back to you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so the next one here. Foreign Secretary visits Ukraine after UK's multi-year commitment to deliver £3 billion UK pound sterling of military support. So there's £3 billion into the economy. Is this a bit of money laundering? Where's Ukraine getting their money from to pay for all this? Begs the question, doesn't it? Anyway, Naughty Old Russia, another government website, .gov.uk page here. Russia's impact on global food security, UK statement to the OSCE. So, you know, this whole interdependency thing that we always say about worked really well until someone decides to go to war with somebody else. Now here, the former Prime Minister, who nearly burst into tears when Brexit occurred, David Cameron, visits Kyiv or Kiev, however you want to pronounce it. I prefer chicken Kievs myself. Kyiv or Kiev can use British weapons inside Russia, says David Cameron. Oh, not in my name, mate. Anyway, home security action delivering major cut in migration. Robust home security action. This is another government page, by the way, folks. If any of you want any of the links, just send me a message, no problem. Maleficus@outlook.com, LL. Robust home security action has driven almost 80% fall in student-dependent applications in the first quarter of 2024 compared to the same period of 2023. You know, that I say about all this major cut in migration, because they're doing a big push this week on the first crackdowns apparently have occurred in the UK regarding sending asylum seekers who aren't supposed to be here over to Rwanda. So where are we here? So I'm struggling to find that. The UK has begun mass arrests of potential Rwanda deportees. What's next? Asks Al Jazeera. Well, BBC News is stating that Rwanda can't guarantee how many migrants it will take from the UK. That's coming from a statement from Rwanda's governing body there, whoever that may be. And so this other one here. So this is from fortune.com. Now, this really irritated me when I read this. Let's just block that a sec, right? Think about Europe, but everything a little worse. The UK economy could stare down long-term irrelevance without immigration. And it's talking, this article here is talking about how we need immigration. Here we go. I've highlighted this bit. The country hasn't been able to benefit from migration flows to offset the tight labour market, unlike the European Union's common market. So, yeah, and obviously they're saying ageing populations and this, that and the other. Sounds like an article, Andy, written by these folks. Let me refresh this page because it's there we go. Protesters slash bus tire to stop migrant removal from London. Dear, oh dear, what is the world coming to? So I'm going to hand it back to you, Andy. That's it from me this week. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll catch you again next week.
Yes, and I'm just looking out the window, Malif, because it's been all sunny, but I think your clouds are heading this way. So the wind
you're welcome
must be blowing.
To them.
Yes, in our direction.
You're welcome.
So, says black. I just looked on the BBC weather for my area. It says black cloud from about 2 o'clock. I think they're about a couple of hours behind there, because it's not looking great, and there's going to be rain as well later in the day. I will be returning to what I started while I was eating my breakfast, and that is the third episode of Midsummer Murders, which actually has the Hollywood actor Colin Farrell in one of his first roles. And for those of you overseas who don't recognise the programme, overseas it was called Inspector Barnaby. And the reason I mention that is when the lead actor, John Nettles, decided to retire, because the show was called Inspector Barnaby, they needed to still be able to use the show title. So the way that they got round that was they had his replacement being, I believe it was a cousin, who was also doing a similar job in the police, but in another force, who ended up transferring into John Nettles' old job. Being a relative, he still had the name Barnaby, so the overseas title of the show, Inspector Barnaby, was not affected by the change in actor. I do apologise if that was completely boring to those of you who don't watch such things, but you'll be pleased if you do feel that way to hear that this is now the last item. Daily Mail headline, Army reservist murderer who shot dead his wife 26, used her life insurance payout to buy life-size sex doll, and then made his mum defend debauched purchase in court. On that bombshell, you have been listening to The Limeys, episode 166, That Vaccine Story You Never Heard About. We Limeys will be back with you next Sunday. Peter is on a speaking tour, so I'll be back with you on Saturday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.